to the final show of season 4 of LOI Weekly. It's episode 30 with myself, Johnny Ward, and Dan McDonald. We're here to crown Dundalk the FAI Cup winners, denying Shamrock Rovers a Dublin dramatic circumstances at Lansdowne Road in extra time and making an absolute fool of me in the process. Seems like I'm actually motivating underdogs to win the FAI Cup now for several years at this stage. But we have on the show Johnny Dunleavy, who was part of one of said teams, Cork City, back in the day. And we have Rory Higgins, the chief scout of Ireland and their opposition analyst as well. So we've a packed show today to get through the 2020 season in all its glory and it's all, in all its bizarre nature, really. Good morning to you lads.
Good morning. Good morning to you lads, indeed. It's good to hear from you both.
Good morning, morning man. How are we?
Good. Yeah, good. It's good to see you, Johnny. We were a little bit worried for you there. You went missing for a few days. You're all right?
It was one of the most noticeable digital silences of all time, it has to be said. Johnny, can we just go back to last Thursday night for starters, can we? Dundalk v Molde on Thursday. Now, you've already spoken about this in other places. What happened? What happened to you last Thursday?
Dundalk produced a fairly limp performance and lost 3-1. That's what happened. And
What happened to you?
They brought it to five games in the group stages without a point, and they brought it to six games last night without a point. But just to bring back to the matter, it doesn't really matter. It does remind me of the story of the lad who crashed the car at home. He an old lad at home where I'm from. He went on dry November. Now, he would have been fond of the old points. So he went on dry November, went on the beer early in December, crashed the car, and his immediate response was, this would never have happened if I'd gone off the beer in November. So I had been off the beer in November, and I had a few beers for the Dundalk game, and maybe the old IPAs were a bit strong, but more or less, I stand by what I say. I think Rovers would have done okay in that group. If you look into the game last night, if Arsenal went into that game with nothing to play for and the Dundalk went into the game with a crowd behind them, they might have made something of the game, but 4 points could have gotten you second in that group if Arsenal had won all the game.
So I think... let's just go back to the point at hand here. So third of the 12th, Gano just said Dundalk go into Sunday on a high. That's the level Dundalk have been at this year. This is at 25 past 10 on December the 3rd. You didn't appear online in any format for another 6 days. So, there was a game on Sunday. You were getting a lot of comments aimed in your direction. Radio silence.
I suppose I woke up a little bit hungover on Friday and was probably getting, a lot of, I wouldn't say abuse, but a lot of people kind of question my general sanity, which is fair enough, including yourself on Friday. So I was just I have had obviously spells where I think social media is a bit of a love-hate relationship with it, which is fair enough. I don't think it really helps anyone's lives. But in any event, I was like, oh God, probably had a few too many beers last night. I did think it was hard to believe that Sean Gannon would say that they went into the game on a high, considering they'd lost 5 games in a row. They were outplayed by Molde. I mean, getting a consolation goal going into the game on a high, I thought was a strange thing to say. I don't think Stephen Kenny would have embraced that attitude in 2016 when they did so well in the groups. And I think Dundalk should be better than that. I think they should have gotten something out of the group in terms of points. I think Shamrock Rovers would have done better in the groups, which is fair enough to say they were miles ahead of them this year in the league. They weren't miles ahead of them on Sunday, though. And it was good to get a bit of banter with Patrick Hooban again afterwards.
Johnny, just I think you're going off subject slightly here. So you can throw punches, but it very much looks like you can't take them.
I absolutely can, Higgs.
As Dan just gave you a stat there. You were on very very vocal online, and then all of a sudden you just go offline.
No, I get plenty of replies on Thursday, but then on Friday, I was probably quite busy on Friday as well. I was like, oh God, I can't be dealing with this. And then, whatever. I mean,
but Sunday after the game, did
even Sunday was neither here nor there.
Was particularly rude. No, John, Pat was being very nice inviting you out, and you just completely ignored him.
Any crack. It's a very normal. How are you keeping? Have you been? Maybe a bit worried that you've been. I got a couple of messages from players as well, just inquiring about your whereabouts.
In fairness,
it's very very good to know that there's people just really want to know where you are.
There is that. In fairness to Pat, like, he did play a massive role in all of Macmillan's goals in the FAI Cup this season. So I'd imagine.
Whoa, he was,
to be fair. Just let me
settle down, Johnny.
Let me just read this. And did you have a drink
last night as well?
I didn't have a drink last night.
You're disrespecting the record, Dundalk's record, someone who has been prolific for a number of years in the League of Ireland.
He has, and, if not so much.
But you're constantly at him.
I'm not constantly at him. I actually texted the Hoobinator, best wishes in the birth of his baby recently, and he got back to me. We get on very, very well. It sounds like Father Ted here. But before we end up with all this nonsense, right, this is actually the preview I wrote for this game. It's very brief for the race.
Here we go.
Nine of the last 15 FAI Cup finals finished in a draw. Every chance that Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk's game will go to extra time. Rovers have been much the best team this season. However, these sides clashed 12 months ago the final, which ended in a draw, and the Dundalk seem to be back to something like that form now after going through the motions for much of the league campaign. In the cup quarter final, they brushed Bohemians aside, and on that form, they have to give it a good go against the Hoops. Rovers might not be helped by the fact that they've had few games of any real consequence in recent weeks, whereas Dundalk have had plenty. And my last line was, on their day, Dundalk are well up to beating Rovers, and this looks likely to be keenly contested. I recommended the draw at 5-2. So what happened on Sunday wasn't a surprise to me. Maybe I actually think Dundalk haven't played a lot of games recently. Stood at them, and in fairness, they came out of a difficult situation, and they've made next season look a lot more interesting. But this shouldn't be about me. Just should be about the FAI Cup again. And I still think, I don't know, what do you lads think about the European performance? Last night, I thought they performed really, really well. It's not the games against Arsenal. I think they should have gotten at least a point in that group.
Well, I'm just going to say, like, your opinion is it's neither here nor there, but Shamrock Rovers would have given this group a serious rattle, and Bowes would definitely have a point or more at this stage. Now, I'll throw it over to the lads, the experts here. My opinion on that is the Shamrock Rovers are a very, very good side. They've been excellent this year, but they could have played pretty well in all six games and got no points. And I don't think you can say with absolute certainty that they would have given the group a rattle, or that Bowes, who were hammered by the Dundalk in the Cup semi-final. The Dundalk are better than Bowes, let's be honest. They finished second. Bowes had ahead in the league. So we need to say that with certainty. It's a bit of a recurring theme of the year. That you seem to think that everyone in the League of Ireland, apart from the Dundalk, would be doing better in whatever European game you're watching at that particular time. Whereas my view in the season is that the Dundalk have actually just played at times in Europe on a level way above what they've shown at home, way above it. And if they played at that level at home, but then you can't say that and then at the same time start talking about how, Pats and Shells and all these other clubs would have fared against Rapid Vienna and whatnot. If Dundalk had brought that level to league games,
Dundalk's performance in Vienna was very, very, very good at times. And they were just unfortunate on the night. And I agree with Dan, you can't say with any certainty that Rovers or Bowes or anyone would have picked up results, because we don't know basically. But they say that they were poor in Europe. Results wise, yes, but in terms of performance, there were spells in nearly all the games where they held their own and they were brave in possession. Even last night, they're playing against the top Premier League team, and they were trying to play through them.
They were poor, to be fair. I think they played actually well in pretty much every game and stages. They gave away some very bad goals. I think they'd be disappointed.
I don't think they were poor in Europe.
I think they were poor in the league, to be honest.
I think they deserved more out of the group than they got, to be honest. Just for certain mistakes in certain games and conceding goals at bad times. You look at Arsenal out in the Emirates, they were... don't get me wrong, Arsenal dominated the ball, but it was the 41st minute, if I'm right in saying, where Arsenal set play, if I remember rightly. So I don't think that they can be ashamed of how they've done in the group. Obviously, they would have liked better results, but performance-wise, I think there was a lot to be positive about in certain games.
if just say if Arsenal win all their games in that group, in that situation, 4 points can actually qualify the second team. Now, it would have been a massive, massive task for Shamrock Rovers, but I think they would have been more competitive. And Bowes are so well coached, I think they would have got 1 point out of the group. That's all I'm saying. I'm not putting something on Twitter as fact. Twitter is a basically an uncensored media. It is what it is. You have a few IPAs, you put something out there, you have a bit of debate. But I do think, and I know you're going to disagree with me, Johnny Dunleavy, on this, because you maybe are a bit more, I don't know, pragmatic or realistic. I do think there's a lot of quality in the League of Ireland. And I think in general in Europe, even looking at what Bowes did this season, Shamrock Rovers performed quite well against Milan. I think we've...
But also struggled at home to a team from Finland who finished mid-table. If you're going to pick one-off games as a basis for forming an entire opinion on a club, then there could be some bloke, there could be the Finnish Johnny Ward, could be over there now talking about how actually Ilves Tampere, who finished fifth in their league, actually could have maybe lost 1-0 to Milan or something. I don't know, it's sort of like if you brought that form guide to your work in racing, like you'd be sort of Johnny would empathize with this. You'd be talking like it's like a fella backing a horse with a lot of ones next to his name in a shop, you know, a handicapper in a group one and thinking just because they win. Like there's more to it than that. Rovers are far better than that Finnish team. I guess what I'm just saying is that, like, in European one-off games, teams, what you see from one team at a given time in a particular game, it does not reflect at the level they are at 100%.
Absolutely.
You can watch Rapid Vienna against Dundalk at home, and there's no doubt that their performance in that game probably, you know, lacked maybe some of the application you would expect from a team at that level. But the fact is, like, they're the second-best team in Austria, which is one of the better leagues in Europe out of 55. You look at the results that that team Wolfsburg are like beat Feyenoord away and at home, I think, as well. Like, so that's like a form guide over a consistent period of time. And what they've shown is that, you know, you can't just watch them once and think, well, all the teams in our league would have a go when you can pick one off. Like Derry lost to the worst team in Lithuania.
Yeah.
You know, Derry lost to the worst team in Lithuania in a one-off game. As I said, Rovers, our best team this year, if the penalty shootout had gone against them, the record books would have shown that their European contribution to this season, where they were declared as possibly the best team in recent memory, that their European record this year, if they hadn't taken penalties better, remember that penalty shootout went on forever. It went on, like, went down to the second or third. So if that doesn't go their way, the record books would show that the best team in recent memory lost to an average Finnish side in Europe. And you couldn't take that and beat that as, you know, Rovers with a stick. That also wouldn't be fair.
Let's let Johnny Dunleavy in on that. And I think I did say this from yesterday. Shamrock Rovers' set pieces, right, would have been a massive asset in Europe. Dundalk did very little from set pieces and actually conceded a lot of goals. If you look at Pico Lopez and Jack Byrne, how they've combined in Europe against good teams, I think Rovers would have done well at set pieces, would have defended them better than probably Dundalk have done in this group. And you're talking about fine margins in that regard. Not to mind general play, we saw Dundalk leaking two goals from set pieces again in the cup final. I think they weren't at the level that they could have been at in many ways this season. But maybe I'm wrong, Judy.
Well, I think your first takeaway from the whole thing should be the next time you start a tweet with "it's neither here nor there," you just leave it at that. That's enough. But what I would say as well is, like, there is loads of quality in the League of Ireland. I'm always harping on about it. I think it's underestimated, all of that. But you have to remember as well, and I think you do this to a degree as well, Johnny, is that you underestimate the quality in the rest of Europe. Mm. Like, for example, you talk about Molde. In the first 15 minutes of the second half, in the first half against Dundalk, just take Molde for example, in the first half against Dundalk, it looked like they were kind of feeling them out, sort of, you know, seeing what they were up against. For the first 15 minutes of the second half, they were essentially unplayable. And the Dundalk boys will tell you that. Like, the levels in Europe are just incredible. Bar some individual errors this year, I thought Dundalk acquitted themselves very well. I thought they were excellent to watch last night at times. The brand of football that they play, as Higgsy was saying, like, to play out from the back against a team like that, for Gary Rogers to be playing 6-yard passes from goal kicks, you know, it's brave. It's very, very brave. And I certainly wouldn't disrespect them. As I say, bar some individual errors, I think they acquitted themselves very, very well.
Yeah, I enjoyed the game last night. And one thing, Higgs, interesting to get your view on this. just the quality of technical players coming to the fore. And Jordan Flores, obviously, what he's done over the past, you know, what he's done this season, but last night and in the cup final. And also Patrick McIlhenny, just in the patches that he's kind of been involved. And again, he didn't play enough really in the Europa League group stage. But these lads, just technically, they seem to be well able for it at that level. And it's a joy to watch League of Ireland teams doing that.
Well, just touching on Jordan first, if you look at it, and Jordan will be the first to admit about 18 months ago, he was genuinely considering quitting the game because of his injuries. He's obviously had a few setbacks in his career and his life. So for him to sort of get to the level he's at now is credit to himself first. And what I would say about Jordan is that he's got an absolute wand. I know he scored last night with his right foot, but he's one of the best left foots I've ever seen in the game. Brilliant passer of the ball, technically excellent. He has a few aspects that he does need to improve on, and he knows that himself. But in terms of technically and that left foot, there's not many better left foots around. And I'm delighted, to be honest, I'm delighted because he's a brilliant fella. I'm delighted to see the progress that he's made. And going on to Patrick, for me, he's right up there with the most. He's had a lot of setbacks with injury. But if you sort of take that away and you just look at natural talent, Johnny, I'm sure Johnny would agree with me here that he's right up there with, in my opinion, he's right up there with the best, some of the best players in the last 10 years in the League of Ireland. He's a joy to watch, and I've seen it firsthand. I've played with him first and foremost, and I've coached him. And in terms of a technician, he's phenomenal. And I thought he looked and he's not even at his fittest. I thought he looked very, very comfortable in the games that he's played in Europe. And I could only imagine him being at his peak fitness at that level. But for me, I think he's a top-class player.
Hey, lads, just before we move on, we're actually just going to listen to a bit of audio from Filippo Giovagnoli after last night's game. This is with Gavin McLaughlin, the Dundalk internal, one of the internal press staff at Dundalk, just Filippo's reflections on last night and also the week.
Filippo, for the last time this season, what's your thoughts on the game we've just witnessed?
Oh, it was a good performance for sure. We did really well. We were thinking to of course defend well, organize, and we conceded some cheap goal, to be honest. But overall, the performance was really good. We were really good on the ball, comfortable. The build up was good. We didn't panic, and of course, at this level, if you have some hesitation in the defensive third, the level of the opponent is so high that of course they're gonna punish you.
You mentioned cheap goals. When you look back at this whole Europa League campaign, is that the thing that will frustrate you the most? Some of the goals we've given away.
Yeah. It's this is something that we have to work on, right? Defensively focused in every situation. Sometimes we pay more attention in what we have to do with the ball. But we're going to have time to work defensively. I love to do it. I am Italian, so this is clear. So we're going to spend time in pre-season. But overall, was a good journey, good experience for the players, and some really good performance.
One of the things you must have been proud of tonight, they kept trying to play football, even in the late stages. You just kept trying to play it from the
absolutely,
back.
Absolutely. This was one of the objectives tonight. Keep on going to play, have the ball, retain the ball, don't give the ball back. Try to defend having the ball. This was the idea, which they did. I'm happy. And for me it was a good performance, and proud for the players. Some really good individual performance, so really good overall.
As you say, some big positives. Jordan Flores with another brilliant goal, but Jamie Wynn, 19-year-old kid coming on for his European debut against Arsenal. I know there's no supporters here, which is a big pity. But what a memory he will have.
No, yeah. Of course, we like to start to introduce the players from the academy in our squad. Jamie is doing really well, so he was training really well. He deserves the opportunity.
It's been a big couple of days off the field. your contract has been confirmed. Jim McGilton has been confirmed as our new sporting director. I believe you've spoken to Jim in the past couple of days. What can we expect over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot to work, me and Jim and the club. It's going to be a lot to do, so we're going to work even if we are in a kind of vacation. It's not going to be really a vacation for me. It's going to be just work home from Italy. And I met Jim. Jim is going to bring his experience, his character, and it's going to be a big plus for the club.
Supporters, Filippo, you can understand they're looking to know players' contracts. Can we expect some news on that in the next couple of days?
Yes. We're going to start to work. We have no rush. We discussed with all of our players. Now it's going to be just make the deal with the contract. That's it.
You go back home to Italy. You go back home as an FA Cup winner or FAI Cup winner. Third place in the league, Europa League group stages. What have you learned in your 3-4 months here?
Well, I learned what means play in the League of Ireland, what is football in this part of the world. But I'm still learning. I still need to learn. And of course, I think Jim is going to help me a lot to do that with his experience. And I'm looking forward to work with him.
And just finally, the important thing is to build on this next year and try and get that league title back.
Yes, we're gonna prepare to be strong, to compete, to win the league for sure. This is our objective.
Filippo, thanks very much, and have a good Christmas back in it.
Thank you.
So Higgs, I mean, listen, you're working for the FAI now, and you're very much in a neutral capacity in your job, but some people listening just are aware. You mean you work? You've played at Dundalk, and you've been on the staff. And this time last year, you were plotting. Dundalk remaining at the top of the tree again. Like, what have you made of their season from outside? Because I mean, Filippo alluded to it there. I mean, there's been highs and lows. The mere fact that he's come in, you know, is part of that. And then there's also the appointment to Jim McGilton, which has been referenced there, and the hope that maybe it might lead to a period of stability off the park. Because listen, it's not, we've talked about it here, it's not exactly a massive exclusive to say there's been trouble behind the scenes. It's very, very well known. So look, what have you made of how they have finished the season after all that's happened?
And to be honest, Anna, I think the players deserve huge credit there. It has been very difficult for them. There's 14 players or something that got out of contract, so that brings its own sort of uncertainty and sort of players wondering every day of the week where their next job is and stuff like that. So that part of it's difficult. And I think what I'm hearing is Filippo's delighted that Dundalk have brought in a sporting director. It helps him. And I think Jim McGilton's a very, very good appointment. I think you'll see more players now committing their futures to the club over the next days, weeks or whatever. So on the pitch, they've definitely improved as the seasons wore on, and off the pitch, it looks now that by putting Jim in place, that the future looks a lot more certain than what it did even a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, like, on that improvement, I mean, just even as they are playing, how they've played in the last week or a couple of weeks, and I'm thinking of the Bow semi-final. I'm not sure if you saw all of these games, but like, you know, the Bow semi-final, and you know, even compared to where they are in August, because it was head scratching really in August to see Dundalk performing as poorly as they were. And I appreciate there was a lot of things going on. You know, Harry Taft's passing, which was very, you know, impactful, and a lot of people there. But even just the way they were playing at that time, it was very noticeably below par relative to what they found in recent weeks. I mean, what are you seeing that's improved, I guess?
Well, maybe it coincides. They've changed their system, obviously, and they've gone to a back three, and I think that allows. And to be honest, the fixture schedule once the European campaign started was absolutely crazy, and the likes of Michael Duffy was probably getting overused and that sort of thing. And Michael had a small injury where I think it was 12 days out, and his form just went completely up a level when he had that small break. And then his first game back. I think he only trained 1 or 2 days before the Bohemians game, and I thought he was brilliant in the game, and it was more like him. And I don't know. I think the 3-4-3 that they're playing at the minute suits a lot of players, and it gives Duffy and Michael Inney and that them types of lads more freedom. And I think winning games just breeds confidence, and they got a win or two, and then and it just snowballs from that.
And yet, JD, at the same time, to be fair, like an hour into the cup final on Sunday, I mean, it looked really like this is, you know, Shamrock Rovers are going to win the double. They're going to go an unbeaten season. I mean, to be fair, I mean, they were well on top of the game at that stage. I mean, what's your read? You've been involved in sort of cup finals and how these things can swing. Like, what's your read on what happened in that game? Because, I mean, anyone from Rovers listening to this, I still think in the aftermath, they were almost a bit shell-shocked that they'd managed to lose it.
Yeah, well, I thought actually, for the first 5 or 10 minutes, I thought Dundalk started really well. A bit like the European games where they were playing, you know, decent football and they, you know, they looked good. And then gradually Rovers started to get on top and, you know, but they were on top really without hurting them too much, I think. I think they got their goal and they got 1-0 up. And although they were playing nice stuff, they were kind of playing in front of Dundalk a lot. And then, although to be fair, I do think Rovers would be wondering how they ended up 2-1 down. Dundalk really, when their chances came, they were very, very clinical. Probably the sign of a good team, really. I thought it was an excellent cup final myself, Dan, to be honest. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the first half. I enjoyed the second half, you know, very much. I thought it was very, very good quality.
Yeah, I mean, Dave McMillan's story is incredible, really. Like, I don't think he would have an issue if we said it, that when he came back in sort of August, September, maybe he's you know, quite well, that like he didn't look like his old self when he came back. And you see what happened to him in Scotland, you're thinking that the classic thing that's said with these guys is, which is maybe he's finished, you know, and that always lingers in the back of your head. And yet, all of a sudden, like, he's got a hat-trick in a cup final. I mean, it does speak to his character to some degree that he was able to sort of turn it on when he did.
No, in fairness, like, he went to St. Johnstone and had a few loan spells and it didn't work. But, like, how many chances were them teams creating? I'm not so sure. When you go to a team in the League of Ireland who dominates the ball and all the games maybe bar Rovers, they're going to create a lot more chances. And he's a goal scorer. He sniffs out things and he runs off the back of people and he's got players who create chances for him. So, and obviously he came to Dundalk and he was undercooked. He hadn't played and didn't play that much football before he turned up. So, and I know the type of character he is as well. He's a phenomenal person and I'm not surprised. But just going back to the cup final, I think if you're looking at it sort of between 20 minutes and 70 minutes, you're thinking there's only one winner here, because Rovers were very, very dominant. But it just takes it. And we've been involved in cup finals with Cork, Johnny, the Seanan Maguire goal, and it's just one moment and it changes the whole face of the game. And Dundalk grew in momentum. And I think the point Johnny made earlier on where the games, the intensity of the games that Dundalk have played at in Europe, I think it stood to them in the latter stages of the game and an extra time. And I thought from that moment on, from around 75 minutes right through to the end, the extra time, I thought Dundalk were the dominant team, and it probably goes back to the level of games that they've been playing at.
This was an interesting one as well, though, wasn't it? Because the substitutions and all that, you know, I think Vinnie Perth, who's obviously gone to Dundalk, I think he deserves credit for McMillan coming in, because Georgie Kelly went and McMillan came in. And I think a lot of people would have questioned that, including me, who I expect Georgie Kelly to get more goals than he did at Pats. And as much as McMillan was kind of bought for Europe, and he obviously got those couple of penalties and did quite well in Europe, he essentially won the cup for them in many ways. And it proved a very shrewd signing. But like, just looking at the squad depth, did Dundalk showcase a better squad in the way in extra time than Rovers did? Because Rovers players who came off the bench and the changes they made just didn't work at all to the same extent.
That's a good question. And I think the introduction of Jordan Flores was huge for me. The game had opened up.
His pass for the
phenomenal.
It's absolutely class. Yeah,
brilliant. As I said earlier, brilliant footballer. And I think it suited him at that stage to be introduced. And I think in them sort of games, maybe that role, he mightn't like me saying this, but maybe that role suits him where it's nip and tuck, and then as the game gets stretched, then you introduce players that come and it can have a big impact in the game, and he showed his quality on the day. But and then Daniel Kelly as well, the game opened up, and he's got the pace and the running behind people and stuff like that. So I think Dundalk's substitutions on the day, as you said, were very, very good. And the manager, Filippo, needs to take huge credit for that as well.
Yeah, I think it's striking as well. I mean, you know, Dundalk, I mean, there is some players whose future at the club looked to be very doubtful in August, who played a big part in the run-in. You know, you look at Brian Gartland, Dan Kelly himself, Cameron Dunnigan, who was you know, face not fitting territory, and how they've all managed to actually contribute. They've actually managed to make it a squad game. Like, they really have. And at times, maybe they've got the balance wrong with the rotation. I think it's fair to say at times they've probably gone a bit too far. But it is quite striking. Like, I don't know, throw this to JD. What have you made of Rovers this year, Shamrock Rovers this year, or Shams, to give it the proper title for your Sligo parish? Like, does what happened on Sunday diminish their year in any way? You know, does it show they've still got a bit to go to get to that sort of one of the top sides of recent memory sort of status, which is, I'm sure our host thinks they're already there. But I would have to view maybe they've got a small bit more to win before they can get to it.
And also to add to that, what happens if Jack Byrne leaves then?
Yeah, well, for me, it doesn't diminish what they've done this year. Anyway, I think their improvement over the last 3 years has been sort of, it's been brilliant to watch just how they've matured as a team and sort of matured into learning the shape that Stephen Bradley wants them to play as well. I think watching the streaming service this year, or having it, allowed us to watch a lot more games. And one of the games that I watched that really, I don't know, it marked them down as the, it showed me the maturity that they've developed, was when they played Finn Harps away in the league, just before they played them in the cup game, actually, but they played them away in the league and they made a few changes to the team. And they were just so professional and dominant in their performance. It was a night where they could easily have gone up there. The league was won at this stage anyway, probably. They could easily have gone up there and just got turned over and, you know, let it happen. But they went up and I think they won 2-0. And on the night, they were brilliant. They were so professional. So I think they're probably maybe one or two players short of where Stephen Bradley really, really wants them to be. But in terms of what they can do in playing against them, I mean, they really are a brilliant side to watch. And Jack's obviously a massive part of that, Johnny. I've been right behind him when he's whipped one into the top corner in Tala. And he's got it all. And it'll be a massive loss if he does go.
Yeah, I know. Like, what's he like to play against, Johnny? Because I think it was it last year. I think you might have spoken to us and said, listen, he's up there. I mean, anything you've played against in the league, I mean, it does seem quite likely that he may leave. Just listened to him the other day. He was making those comments about making the step for yourself and his career. And I'm not closing the door on it, but it does seem quite likely. I mean, you've been involved and you played with some very good players and against, but where does Jack stand in that sort of category?
Look, he's right up there. He's kind of, you know, there are certain players that just have that little bit extra. Probably the most recent that I would have played with, say, would have been Shaunae Maguire, where they can just turn a game on its head just in an instant. And Jack has the same thing. But it's not that they do it every so often. It's that they do it so consistently as well. Like, Jack can hurt you from anywhere. I mean, if you ask Gary Buckley, he'll not like me saying this now, but if you ask him about, he played a pass at Tala against Sligo, whatever it was, a month ago. Like, that
we,
pass
we had
was,
a good chat about that actually on the pod with Gary afterwards.
That pass was
a phenomenal pass.
I mean, that's phenomenal. Like, you can't, not many people see that, don't they?
I mean, the touch from Graham Burke as well, that quality in European combat, I mean, could beat anyone really, couldn't it?
Will you stop? Will you stop? But John, no, John, you need to put a leash on you.
I want to ask Higgs though.
You need to put the Sligo defence into that European game though. It's been a bit harsh on the Sligo defence.
Sorry, Johnny. Just on that pass that Johnny's talking about, seeing it's one thing, but then executing it's another thing, and he done the ball like that. That's world class. I don't get that pass itself in isolation. Yeah. It's world class.
And the touch nearly as well.
Well, that's fair enough. But if he doesn't have that touch unless the pass is made. But
on that,
if you see that pass anywhere in the world, like if Xavi makes that pass, you're raving about it. It's a phenomenal pass.
Couldn't agree more. But from your sort of like Irish perspective, does Jack ideally need to move now? From my perspective, he does to move on to next level. He needs to take a punt at this stage. What do you think?
Well, you could see in his introduction and in the two games where he came on that he definitely has the quality. What Jack does is up to Jack. So, but in terms of quality, Jack's a phenomenal footballer. And in fairness to Stephen Bradley, when Jack came in, they were testing different systems out, and he found a system that suits Jack Byrne. And from the outside looking in, I don't have a clue, but from the outside looking in, it looked to me like he was going, right, how can I get the best out of Jack Byrne? And he flipped it to a back three, and he gave him a freer role and sort of the box midfielder, whatever way you want to call it. But he has to take credit there, and he's got the very best out of him. And Jack has, I think Rovers have been great for Jack, and Jack's been great for Rovers, and it's been a good sort of marriage. And whatever Jack does now is completely up to himself, but we all know that he's a very, very talented footballer.
Look, the thing about it is, I mean, Rovers are still in a very good position if Jack Byrne does leave. I mean, their business otherwise has been excellent. They've pretty much tied down most of the players you'd want to keep. You know, I think Dylan Watts, a long-term deal. And we'll see what happens in terms of recruitment if Jack Byrne does leave. I mean, Danny Mandrew is certainly a name that's going round. There'll be a few others. I mean, like, you know what it takes to sort of be involved in those high-stakes European games. Higgs, if you look at Rovers' squad at the moment, what do you think they need to get to that level? Because, like, next year, they're going to be the team in the Champions League. With all due respect to the other teams, they start in the conference, the Europa Conference. It's, you know, you have to just win through a load of rounds. It's all about that Champions route, really. To make that progress in Europe, it's no coincidence that our three teams who've got into group stages all started in the Champions League. So, like, you look at that Rovers squad, like, what's your assessment of it, and what do they need, if anything, to sort of to lift them?
To be honest, I don't think they need too much. I think you can see year on year they're growing as a team, and they'll all have benefited from this year's experience. I don't know, maybe a different type of midfielder. Someone, like, they're all brilliant in terms of linking the play and getting on the ball and playing between lanes, but maybe Dylan Watts is the one that can run beyond, like, I don't know, what Richie Toyle done for Dundalk for years in terms of running past the centre forward. I don't know if they have that type of player as much, but I personally don't think that they need an awful lot, and if Jack goes, who replaces him? That's crucial. But another player who completely goes under the radar for me in the Rovers team is Joey O'Brien. I think what he brings to that dressing room. And Johnny, I watched that game, the Finn Harps game that you were talking about. I thought he drove the team on that night. You can see by his body language,
he scored as well, easily.
Someone that has played in the Premier League at an extremely high level, they go up to Finn Park and tough conditions and lead by example. I don't know the lad; I've never ever spoke to him, but I think he looks to me like a tremendous character and someone who has been very, very important for that Rovers dressing room.
I think, to be fair, it's something that got lost a bit in the analysis of the cup final. I think Joey O'Brien gone off at half time. What was big for Rovers in the context. I know they had Lee Grace to come on, but they had a sort of a certain balance there, and they had to sort of reshuffle it a small bit, and they just found it a bit harder afterwards. And the one thing you've noticed, we've been able to notice from the closed doors games, and hopefully we have crowds back where you can hear a lot more. You can hear a lot more of the shouts and the organisation and so on. And Joey O'Brien is the loudest voice in that Rovers team. And I think when you take him out of a game like that, it's a big one, Johnny, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's it. Like, you're right, Dan, where you can hear people. Like, the game we played up in Tala in the semi-final, when the game started going against him, he is the one you can hear dragging them out of it. And Rory's dead right. Like, that game up in Ballybuffet, he was incredible. You know, for someone to go from playing week in, week out in the Premiership to be, like, really scrapping in Finn Park and dragging boys out of it, you know, it was great to see.
If I could just get Higgs in again on the Dundalk thing as well. Do you see many players kind of being their opinion maybe being swayed on what's happened over the last few weeks, Higgs, in terms of next season? And a stat that I found completely mad was that their goal record in the league this season is 1.39 goals per game. And in the Europa League group stages, it's 1.33, which is only a very small difference. It's kind of mad how many goals they've scored in Europe. But all these players out of contract, what are they going to do?
I think, again, going back to the appointment of Jim McGilton, I think that the players will look at that. I genuinely haven't spoken to any of them, but the players might look at that and say, right, we've made an appointment in the right place. We look like we're going to be a more solid club. So it wouldn't surprise me if 90% of them now commit their futures to the club. And I think, as someone alluded to earlier, that I think it'll make for a very, very interesting season next year.
But that's what I was going to say. What happens next year? I mean, for what it's worth, we are speaking on Friday morning. You know, we'll see. I'm not sure if Anthony's expected to be announced in the next couple of days, but certainly the chats are. There seems to be more confidence that the likes of Mickey Duffy might stay, that Cameron Dummigan, you know, Dan Kelly, Sean Hoare has been mentioned. It's funny. Like, I think that the season has been draining for some people, and I think a couple might step away. But maybe as Rory said, like, maybe not as many as people would have thought 2 weeks ago, or certainly 2 months ago, where I think even some of the lads under contract, to be fair, they probably would have paid it to be taken out of the club at that stage. I think the morale was that low. And the one thing I would say is that there's a lot of optimism around Jim McGilton's appointment, but I still get a very strong vibe off people at the club that has to be the catalyst for the chairman to have less of a say, because if the chairman continues to have a say, they don't have a chance. So that's the problem. Yeah.
Just on that, Dan, I think winning the cup final would have been massive in terms of trying to keep players, because if you finish the season on a high, so much easier to commit your future to the club, where if you lose that cup final, then players are thinking, oh, maybe it's Rovers' time and we have to go and move elsewhere for a different challenge. But I think that result alone will have definitely had an impact on players' thoughts.
I think as well with Giovinoli, Dan, and to the rest of you, the fact that he's used so many players, like, as a squad player, you're thinking, I wouldn't actually mind being there next season, because he does give lads a chance. He gave so many players a chance, and lads came off the bench and had a massive role, because we had Rennie on, and he essentially said that Dundalk had too many players, and that was probably an issue. But would that be a factor, JD, in that, like, you can, if you are a squad player, you're more than a squad player, because he basically has just used his bench a lot?
Yeah, well, I think what will be very interesting actually at Dundalk is whether when the new manager came in, did he think that the 3-4-3 fitted the players that he had, or is that his preferred formation? So, like, in terms of the players that he brings in or the players that he keeps, does he bring in players that are specifically going to play that formation and suit that formation, or is he actually going to revert to another formation that he prefers? I think that'll be very interesting in the off-season, just to see what they do in terms of players brought in and who they keep.
I mean, just so we look to 2021 generally, lads. I mean, this is sort of a half-season review, and it's natural to look ahead. I mean, my opinion is still that the continuity that Rovers will have, that they're still going to be very hard to stop next year. But maybe I think the Dock are the only team who can realistically challenge them. Or am I wrong? I mean, I don't know, like Higgs, Bowes, your old mate Stevie O'Donnell at Pats, can they make the jump next year to really challenge? Or is it a big ask within, let's be honest, budgets talk to some degree when it comes to this type of thing?
Yeah, I think it is a big ask. I think Rovers have set the standard this year. I think Dundalk finished the season very, very strongly. So for me, it's going to be between them two next year. But what I would say is that the job that Keith Long has done at Bohemians has been tremendous, and the recruitment there in particular has been impressive. And then on Pats, I think if you look at Pats against, for example, Shamrock Rovers and Tala recently, they set a standard for me that night that's what the players are capable of. I thought they were very, very good. But that's, we'll move on to that, but what I'm saying is the setup of the team, the energy, they pressed extremely high, they were brave, aggressive. And I think that's the standard that is set. So they have to use that as a reference now going forward. And I think Stevie's recruitment now in the off season.
Where does he get a striker?
Stevie. But I think his recruitment now is going to be very, very important. And I think Stevie will benefit himself from the year that he's had and knowing that the person he is and the drive that he has and the knowledge that he has of the game, that the Pats will improve next year. I'm not saying they can challenge the top two, but I think they'll get closer, is what I would say, if they bring in the players that he wants.
I mean, it's certainly no surprise that a lot of Dundalk players, I think, are tempted to get the chance to go and work with Stevie. It says a lot about how he's regarded. Obviously, the problem they might just have is that still, this is why players are hedging. I mean, budget-wise and so on, like Dundalk are still in a much better position than a club that hasn't qualified for Europe. And that's the problem maybe for Pats to some degree. But one club that has qualified for Europe is Sligo Rovers, though, JD. I mean, you know, you've been there throughout the season. It's sort of, I don't know, it must have been a great sort of buzz around the end of the year, considering during the lockdown, I mean, it was a, you know, let's shake the bucket here and try and keep the club up.
Shake the bucket, bring it up with Dundalk stalwarts for JD.
But they've ended up in Europe and now all of a sudden making some sort of, you know, Romeo Parks is coming back and making, you know, Robbie McCourt. They've kept the Vries, which I think is huge. And all of a sudden, like, making some eye-catching signings.
Yeah, definitely. Like, through that first lockdown, obviously, you're looking at the table and it's not changing. And it had been a very tough start for us. But, you know, what a turnaround in the season. The boys were absolutely fantastic. They deserved it, to be honest with you, Dan. They were brilliant. The amount of work the lads put in, staff included. And, you know, it was a huge achievement for the club. A massive step to get into Europe. And definitely, I think it's been, they've gone about their business very, very well behind the scenes in terms of signing players. Like Romeo coming back is a big one. I've never seen anyone as quick in my life. He's a scary, scary man to play against. And I still don't think, like, I know you mentioned him there, Ryan De Vries. I don't think you've seen the best of Ryan De Vries yet. I mean, that man in training, he has tortured some good players. So it'll be very, very interesting. If those two as a partnership, for example, could click and you add a couple more to that, Sligo could certainly kick on very much next year.
I think Sligo, I agree. I think Sligo's recruitment since Liam took charge has been very, very good. And as you said, Johnny, what was it, 5 defeats in a row? Am I right in saying that? Or 4
row,
at the very, very start?
Yeah, no, 5 in a row at the start, yeah.
So the recover from that shows great character from the group of players. I haven't seen it, or been in there, so I don't really know, but it showed great character from the outside looking in anyway.
Stephen Bradley actually made the point that, I mean, it's the sort of the modern phrase, but he reckoned that, you know, Sligo are the best team in transition in the league, you know, just in terms of how quickly you can break. And I mean, bringing Romeo back, there's definitely, you want the team to have an identity. Like, that's the thing. Sometimes you see teams recruiting and they're just recruiting and they're sort of taking stuff from anywhere just to fill a squad. But there does seem to be, JD, like a plan behind the recruitment. It's, of course, you want a good player if he becomes available, but he actually is also suited to the way you play as well, Parks. Like, that's a big thing. I mean, it's a simple sort of decision about how you accommodate him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and no, Rory's right. The recruitment has been very, very good, you know, from the start. And Liam seems to find players in all sorts of random places, but they fit and they do well for the club. And I think the game that Stephen Bradley was referring to was actually the league game in Tala where we lost 4-0. But there were moments in the first, I'd say, especially in the first half an hour of that game, where we really, really opened up Shamrock Rovers and probably were only a pass or two away from creating very good chances against them. And so, you know, the new boys coming in will undoubtedly add to the team. And I listen, no one will look forward to playing Sligo next year, that's for sure.
As much as Cork have gotten relegated as well in Shills, like, I think Drogheda have signed very well and I think Harps have definitely improved. So all in all, I think it's going to be a very competitive league next season. I'll put that to you, Higgs.
Yeah, and just on that, like...
And Derry as well, obviously.
Yeah, Ollie Horgan and Paul Higgerty deserve huge credit. If you're looking at... You're talking about budgets earlier, like what they've done for me. And it's not, I'm not surprised, to be honest, because I know the amount of work that them boys put in. Johnny will vouch for that. I'm sure he's heard up in Donegal what it's like. But they sort of put together the squad of players that they did, and they achieved. For me, if Stephen Bradley's manager of the year, then Ollie comes a close second for me. And the run they put together towards the end of the season didn't surprise me.
Two defeats in the last half of the season in nine games and one away at Bowes.
Brilliant. Yeah. And it shows, and the spirit that they create among their players is fantastic, and you can see that. And very, 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 and I don't think this has been discussed enough, extremely unlucky to go out of the cup. I think they were very hard done by. But that's for another day. But I think the job that they've done there is tremendous. And just on Derry, I'm going completely off subject here, but it's been a very, very sad week for the club. Two massive supporters have passed away in the last week. And I mean two huge supporters, Hugh McMonagall and Hugh Kern. And I just want to pass on my condolences to the families of both. Extremely sad. And every time you go to the Brandywell, they're huge characters around the place. So that'll be a big loss for the club. But listen, I think it's been a difficult season for a lot of clubs, and it's been difficult for Derry. But if you rewind 12 months, they had a good season. So it's just been a difficult year, and hopefully that they can learn from mistakes maybe that's been made this year and kick on next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point about the, you know, you mentioned the supporters who passed away, and it's even a thought I had just leaving the ground last night. I mean, like, football without fans, it is really not good. Like, it's a really diminished experience, and even the stuff in the last week, you know, the Flores goal or the cup final, you imagine what would have been like with spectators. But it does almost feel this year as well. There's been so many, you know, really big supporters of the league that have passed away. And I mean, it's not to be too sort of morbid about it, but when we do get fans back, I mean, there's going to be a lot of big characters missing from around clubs, and it's just been a really, really, really hard year for a lot of people. And that's been emphasised, and I sort of seemed glib to just move on to something else off the back of it, but, you know, the deepest sympathies, as you mentioned, to the families of the two Hughes. I mean, Higgs, like, you're now obviously in your capacity as a member of the Irish staff, so, you know, for the first time in your life, you would have been watching the World Cup draw on Monday with a stake in the game, you know, probably trying to figure out what countries you might be visiting the next year, or what, you know, I don't know, like, you're going to have to do a lot of sort of research of Azerbaijan or whatever. I mean, Johnny Ward and myself can tell you a few places to play pool over there and get 8 points. But in terms of football, it's such a different story. But your assessment of the World Cup draw?
I think the general consensus is around that it's a good draw. But, like, obviously Portugal speaks for themselves, but then Serbia are a very, very good team. I don't think they should be underestimated by, I think it's easy to throw away comments and say it's a great draw and this and that, and we should finish second in the group. That's what I'm hearing, but we have to be very, very careful. They have some incredibly talented players, and just Mitrovic, for example, who divides opinion, I think it's fair to say divides opinion across football, but what he's done for Serbia in international football is absolutely phenomenal. I think he got 10 goals in the last campaign or something ridiculous like that, so he comes alive when he puts on the Serbia jersey. And Tadic, who was a huge part of Ajax when Ajax got to the semi-final and a kick of the ball knocked him out against Tottenham, I think he was a very prominent player on that team. So they have huge quality. And then you can't take the likes of Luxembourg and Azerbaijan for granted either, because Luxembourg have drastically improved over a period of time now. So as much as the draw probably could have been worse, I don't think we should get carried away and think that we'll definitely finish whatever. So we just need to be careful and take every game in isolation and prepare accordingly. But it's something to really, really look forward to and get our teeth into, and I suppose, get stuck in over the coming months and hopefully begin an exciting chapter.
Yeah, you've been very busy as well. What does it entail for you now over the next few months?
Just going to games, Johnny, getting on. I'm in England every weekend, most midweeks, for maybe 48 hours as well. So I'm just going to games and reporting back and in touch with the staff regularly. And no, it's busy and it's a brilliant experience and something that I'm really enjoying.
And there is like there's a large pool of players as well that could feasibly say, well, I have a shot of being at least in the squad, and a lot more obviously I could be in the team. So like it must be fairly intriguing week to week.
It's great, and I think watching games on Y-Scout or Instat is great. It's a brilliant platform, but there's nothing like being on the ground and watching people at close quarters, and I think you can get a far better gauge of where they are being at the ground and so on. But no, listen, I'm really enjoying it. It's a brilliant group of people to be involved with, and hopefully we can put in a really good performance in the upcoming campaign.
Higgs, thanks a million for coming in. I know you're flat out today with other stuff, and best of luck in 2021 with the Ireland team. We'll all be rooting for the squad.
Yeah, thanks, lads.
Best of luck, great.
All the best.
Cheers. Bye bye.
JD, what have you made of it? I think, as ludicrous as it is to suggest that Shamrock Rovers could have competed in the group stages that Dundalk were in, it's absolutely bonkers to think Ireland got one goal in eight games under Stephen Kenny.
So objectively looking at it, obviously, you would say they haven't scored enough, but I think circumstances really contrived against them, Johnny, you know, in terms of injuries, COVID, different things like that. And I think Rory made a very good point in terms of the camps that they have had now with Stephen Kenny. The players will be well aware of what he expects from them now, and they will have learned. And I think that'll be a big positive going into next year. There have certainly been green shoots in terms of the way that we've tried to play and you know the sort of the style of football that he's tried to implement. So to be honest with you, I'm looking forward to next year. I think it sounded like Rory really is too, and you know he doesn't expect it to be too long before we get those wins and goals on the board.
It's kind of like what Dan said as well. Like I just get the feeling if we start well in Serbia, like start well as we started well in a lot of games actually under Kenny, but score. And if we're 1-0 up after 20 minutes, our tails are up, and you know we could have a very exciting campaign. Whereas if we lose in Serbia, start well but go a goal down and end up losing 1-0 or something, like that game really does look like it's so big.
It could be, but I think it'll be exciting more than anything else for the lads. I think Stephen will be really looking forward to getting the boys back in again. And, you know, if we can have a squad with a clean bill of health, there's an awful lot of talent and quality there. And, you know, when you have that much talent and quality, I think the goals are, you know, it's almost bound to come. So, me personally, anyway, I'd be positive on next year.
We have a couple of questions here. Jack Arthur, can you ask Johnny how he feels about the greatest team in League of Ireland history conceding four to little old Dundalk?
Johnny, I never said they were the greatest team in League of Ireland history. And as I said, I predicted the draw on the cup final, so that wasn't a surprise to me.
You predicted the draw? Yeah. Didn't finish it?
A draw in 90 minutes, Dan. You know from your...
I know that, but like as a tipster, did you not go out there and actually predict you'd win the cup?
I thought Shamrock Rovers were the most likely winners. I know you did as well.
To be fair. No, listen, it's grand.
No, but the game though, like Rovers were by far the better team for 60 or 70 minutes, but they didn't win the game. And I think Dundalk probably did benefit from the fact that they'd had games going into it. And they showed their character. Like, they ultimately did show a lot of character. I think it made it interesting for next season because Rovers were so far ahead of them in the league. You want a title race next season. And now I think it looks very likely we will have a title race because we didn't have one this season.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think maybe it matters from America. We might dictate that still. Julian Canny, well known to both of you guys. Does Johnny Dunleavy think anyone will be able to compete with Galway United in Division 1 next season, given their signings and the move to full-time training? I think Shelburne will have a word about that. I'm surprised one of us hasn't been signed by Shells since the end of the season. But what do you think, JD?
Yeah, Shells have done some serious business. As far as I can see, you know, a lot of signings, a lot of money being ploughed into them for next year. I think Galway have recruited well too, and John coming in, you know, their upturn in form definitely coincided with him coming in, and you know, if they can carry that on into next season with the full time football, with the new lads that have come in. It should be, it promises to be sort of a very competitive first division anyway. And it'll be very interesting to see how it goes.
Just one for you, JD. What have you made of Cork City and what's happened? I know James Clancy was on to me, he's a regular listener as well, just kind of wondering what's going on with, you know, behind the scenes next season. I'm not expecting you to know that, but it's been a really strange kind of couple of years for your old club.
Yeah, obviously, look, I'm not privy to anything going on behind the scenes at all, but I think there's probably still a degree of uncertainty down there, even as regards next year, you know, from the takeover and all that kind of stuff. It's been, look, it's hard, I suppose, to see a club like that fall from grace as, you know, as quickly as they have. It's not nice to see. And look, a club the size of Cork City, with the fan base that they have and the people down there, you know, I can only hope that they, you know, everything gets resolved quickly and they can really get back on the up again, because Cork City have to be in the Premier Division and competing for trophies. As I say, they're, you know, that's the club that they are, and that's what they have to be aiming for. So hopefully next year will be a good year for them.
It's interesting as well, just with the view to next year, like Drogheda signing Dinny Corcoran. I got a strange kick out of that, because I'm just like, I can see Dinny scoring a nice few important goals next season, possibly off the bench, because of his, he's like one of the best finishers in the league, without a doubt. And I think Drogheda have signed Markey as well. They've signed well. And I know you're a fan of Tim Clancy as well and what he's done there.
Ah, yeah, Tim's a gent. I think one of the last times I was on the podcast, actually, he was on with me. And yeah, it's a remarkable job he's done there, really. And Dinny and Dara Markey, like, it's not to be underestimated how big a signings they are. And Tim would Absolutely. Obviously have had to convince them to come in. You know, he would have had to sit down with the lads, and clearly they were impressed by whatever plans he has. So it'll just be interesting to see how they get on next year with the squad that they had last year. Didn't get to see much of them really in the first division, so I can't comment too much on what they had, but definitely their recruiting has been very good.
Just one other question I have. Sorry, Dan. One other question I have for you, and I think you're well-placed on this, considering your background in the game all those years ago when you went over to England, you went over to Wolves. There is this Brexit kind of white, you know, the elephant in the room, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of young players going over, potentially are not going over anymore until they're 18 because of Brexit and so forth. You've also been involved in kind of coaching at Sligo and that. How are we placed in this country to, I don't know, fill the void, if for want of a better word, or how are we set up to produce proper academies in this country? Because you look at Sligo, and say Sligo and Galway United competing for sort of players in that region, and you have a good idea of where it's going, but we're probably miles away, are we?
Well, look, there are terrific young players in the League of Ireland, like that under 19 team, and let's say we had some towards the end of the year, some of the under 17s coming through in Sligo. You know, there are huge amounts of quality coming through, and this is just a Sligo I'm talking about. Now, overall, I think this is a bit of a watershed moment, really, for everyone, and I think structurally we really have to get our house in order. So if we really want to develop players here, and if we have to develop players at home, we need to start developing the links, and we need to start so what I'm saying is, if you have a young player now and you want to bring him into an academy, we have to develop links with schools so that the young lad can get a, let's say we had a lad from Mayo coming in, he has to have somewhere that he can go to school in Sligo, train with Sligo Rovers. We have to develop ways that they can be accommodated in Sligo, whether that's digs or whether that's, I don't know how it's going to work, but we really, really have to start thinking deeply about the structures that need to be put in place in order for us to develop players at home, rather than having them go to England. And we can use the academies in England as a sort of a template, if you like. Like we you know, I've been there, I've seen what they do in terms of educating players, in terms of players living in digs. We might not be able to get to that level straight away, but certainly we have to begin to put the structures in place that players feel that they can stay at home, whether that's going to school and then going to college, developing at their club, getting into a first team, and then moving across to England. But, you know, it really, like, it has to start now, and this should really give us the kick to make that happen.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Jack Byrne, speaking from Dubai, as you do the other day, after he won the PFEI award, the PFE Ireland award, and he was asked about it. And actually, because it's sort of very, like, you know, there's obviously a sort of perception of Jack. He likes a sort of a bit of a joke and whatever, and he doesn't take life too seriously sometimes. But I think he probably gave one of the best answers I've heard in it, really. Just explaining that this Brexit change, that in the short term, it possibly will be damaging for our top tier players, like for the real, you know, the Queevey and Kelleher's or the whoever it might be, you know, the Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott, the very best of their generation. they won't have the same structures and coaching at home that they will get in some of those top UK academies at 16 to 18. Now, I still think the best players will go. They'll find a way, and whether that's going to Germany or you know, entire families moved over in questionable ways. But then he also pointed out, and this is the thing, he said, it's not great for those. But the real issue with England, and you'll know this, JD, it's the people who go over on these sort of, they're not really going over on a professional contract as such. They're going on that contract that just, it's the 16 to 18 contract, really, that at times they're sort of, it does feel like some lads are filling up numbers rather than necessarily, or you know, clubs are taking a punt on them. It's one thing like Gavin Bazunu going over on whatever, 3-4-5 year deal, or, you know, certain ones are getting like really long-term contracts, but you know the lads who are out of contract at 18, no education, they're the ones that we need to be keeping here, even if it's possible that the next Kevin Zeffie, or the Kevin Zeffie or whoever it might be, will still go somewhere. But it's those second tier lads that are the ones, isn't it, really, JD? It's the ones who are, you've probably encountered them, that were sort of filling up numbers a small bit.
Yeah, that's it. Like the YTS system over there, it's, you know, you're on a certain amount of money only for the 2 years. And I think if a club is really serious about bringing you over to England, or generally speaking, when I was going anyway, they would offer you your youth contract, but you would have a professional contract to follow that, yeah. Sort of guaranteed, basically. So you, really and truly, you know where you stand with the club even before you go, probably, in the sense of how much they really want you. Yeah, it's tough. If a lad's only going over on a YTS contract, I would certainly advise him to stay home. As much and all as it's hard to turn down going to England, but if you know, I really do think that long term, if a lad can stay here and he can get 50 or 100 first team games under his belt, you know, it makes you just so much more attractive to a team in England. First of all, you've played men's football, you've learned what it takes to be in a team where, you know, points are actually so meaningful. They mean jobs, they mean money, and that's massive. When a team in England is going to take a punt on you, then you really, they have to pay money for you. And if they have to pay money for you, they really want you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Listen, it's been good to have you on. It's I suppose, you know, your Christmas plans, probably Kempton, Leopardstown. You know, this is the Chepstow.
Down Royal.
Limerick.
Something like that. Well, with the Cheltenham December meeting today, Dan. We've Captain Guinness coming out for his beginner's chase. It's all happening, Dan. It's all happening.
Listen, he might have lost by the time this show has gone out.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens. He's a bit of a headstrong character, like a couple of people on this.
Like one of these presenters. But anyway, it's been great to see you, lads. Very good to be back on.
Thanks a million, JD. And just before we finish up the show, here is a selection of some of our regular guests giving their thoughts on the league. Conan Byrne, Paul Curry, Mark Rossiter, and finally, the inimitable Shane Sobel.
Happy Christmas, lads. And well done on another fabulous campaign for yourselves and League of Ireland Weekly. It's been a great listen as I've been travelling up and down the M1 to training. It's been a wonderful season, I have to say. For us to be able to get through it has been extraordinary. And I think that the players deserve an enormous amount of credit to be able to fulfil all the games. And the clubs themselves, the FAI, I think they all deserve a huge kudos for that. We've seen some terrific goals, terrific saves, terrific games. Dundalk getting to the Europa League group stages, Shamrock Rovers in their invincible season, Sligo Rovers going from looking like relegation candidates to European spot, Bohemians again running, doing so well, coming in second place on the budget that they have, and bringing in fantastic young players as well. It really has been a great season, considering how impactful it has been. So yeah, it's been great. 2021 is something that we we're all looking forward to. I certainly am anyway. I would love to see the Watch League of Ireland streaming service continue for the 2021 season. I think it's been a breath of fresh air, and being able to catch all the games, and for even the players and the clubs being able to catch other games and not having to rely on a small highlights package, I think has been brilliant. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing, lads. Hopefully you'll be back for another season as well. And look forward to seeing you over the Christmas period.
How are you, lads? 2020, wow, what a strange one. I guess my highlight was the Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers game out in Tala early on the season. I was lucky enough to be there. I was behind Jordan Flores' goal as it went in, but it wasn't just his goal. I just thought the stadium that night, the pitch, the standard of play, the pieces of individual brilliance, both Flores' goal and also Jack Byrne's goal, and I remember Hubin's finish, I think it was, that night. And it gave an insight, potentially, what the league could be like if we're able to get more teams to that level and get facilities to that standard. And it was just a really good night to be a League of Ireland fan. My expectations for 2021, or my hopes are really that we can raise the standard of play. For me, there was too many clubs that were way off the mark with their performances this year. I think to the likes of, you know, Pats didn't produce like I thought they would. Derry didn't produce like I thought they would. Waterford were kind of hemming and hawing. And you could probably say similarly with Dundalk, who we would expect so much more on a domestic and, or I guess from a league point of view, just to have a more element of consistency to their play. So I would just like to see that Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk are pushed a little more and that squad strengthened in the right areas and we're able to progress the players that are already in the league and also maybe bring some fresh faces in. So let's see what 2021 brings.
Highlight for me, look at, apart from taking Shamrock Rovers' success aside, highlight for me is Dundalk's comeback, literally from, I suppose, being in a chaotic period for them. You know, this particular season has been difficult for them to come back, win the cup final, qualify for Europe. I think is an amazing achievement for the club. And the players, I think, have to take huge credit for that. Coming back the way that they did, I think it's a bit of a success story within their chaotic part of the season for them, when the last 8 years they've been, you know, next to untouchable, really. They've done really well to come back from that. But also, I think Ollie Horgan with Finn Harps staying up has been huge for them. I don't know how the chap has any hair left, to be honest. But I think the Dundalk thing for me is probably the highlight of the season for me personally. Anyways, yeah, I thought it was magic by them.
Highlights of this year were getting the league back up and running after the lockdown. I know we all needed it. Also seeing Bowes playing Europe and acquit themselves so well was a massive highlight for me, and lots for Bohemians to improve on next year in Europe in particular. Expectations for next season, Bowes getting to a cup final would be nice, and the league getting a bit more support from our association across all fronts would be nice to see, a bit more emphasis put on the marketing side of it, and, you know, investment, which may be difficult at this time, but and also Johnny getting a few predictions right for a change.
On what Supps was saying there, Dan, it was something I was tweeting last night, more sober than 7 days previously, just a lot of exposure for the League of Ireland this season. Obviously, it's kind of, you know, been a strange year with no crowds and all that, but what Jordan Flores has done, 18 goals, I think, by League of Ireland teams in Europe this season. You know, you had the viral nature of some of the goals, notably Flores is at a packed Tala. You know, there's talk maybe that, I don't know, Bank of Ireland might end up being the new sponsor just because the fact that obviously the FAI is beholden to Bank of Ireland. But like, we should be looking for a title sponsor that can bring the league forward and kind of invest properly in it, because I think there is a product there that actually has a lot of potential. But I don't know, where do you think we're at?
Yeah, well, this is the problem. Like, I mean, we reach every end of season and it's nice. Like, we haven't really touched on this yet. You know, we've had football to talk about and, you know, a Europa League game and a Europa League campaign, a great, you know, very good cup final, sort of a very entertaining cup final, I think. And that's brilliant. And that's all the good. And we can talk about Jack Byrne and we can talk about McElhenney and we can talk about, I mean, there's a couple of people we haven't mentioned. I know we had the PFA show last time. Danny Grant won the Young Player Award.
Mark Doyle
won the First Division Award. So we had some sort of future winners on board, and you know, we spoke about sort of Tim Clancy's draw and a lot of great stuff, but a lot of bad stuff as well. As you mentioned, there is no title sponsor. We still don't know where we are media rights wise. you know, you have a situation where Waterford, you know, took an appeal, appeals issues around eligibility of Shane McElhinney for the last game. Finn Harps ended up having to pay a five-figure legal sum to protect their position after being named in a case. So you have a situation there where clubs are effectively taking actions that are, you know, hitting the pocket of other clubs that can ill afford it. And meanwhile, you have Sam Bohn talking publicly about Waterford players being in the dark on certain things. So like, we don't help ourselves sometimes as a league, and a lot of that sort of erodes the good stuff. And like we talk about Brexit and the opportunity it presents, but yet we all know deep down that we're not really ready to capitalise on that because of all of the factors. We've gone to the well so many times in terms of financial support that inevitably, football is going to need government help. And it's one thing talking about government help to do academies and all that, that's needed. But in the short term, we just need government help to get through 2021. Like we still don't, we have a rough idea when the season is coming back and there's a plan, but we still don't know what the situation is going to be around attendances. And that impacts plans and budgets and the sponsorship situation does and everything. So
there's kind of talk potentially of like a league cup being run off early.
The league cup runs off to start the season, yeah. And that sounds
it kind of be group stages potentially, just so.
Yeah. And the logic behind that is that you know, you won't be able to organise friendlies in the way that you normally would because of COVID. Like you might play teams, quite common obviously you'll see play teams from the north or whatever, and probably harder to do that. Whatever happens with the public health situation in 2021, like it's actually not that far until pre-season now, because it's great we've been talking about Dundalk and Rovers and all, but obviously a lot of clubs, the season finished in, Premier Division, only a couple of weeks ago, but First Division clubs obviously longer than that. So like it's actually not that far away, which is maybe good from our perspective. We don't have that long to wait, but certainly it means the pre-season is going to be complicated. But as I say, like there's a process to sort out who's in the First Division, which needs to be resolved. We have the Treaty United from Limerick. We have the old Limerick FC. We have Shamrock Rovers B trying to get in. Yet it appears like there's a draft participation agreement which doesn't allow for B teams. But that's a potential flashpoint. Now, that draft hasn't been signed into practice. It could be changed. But that has the potential to be bruising. We also have, we should mention, Irish CFC.
Yeah.
Or Dublin County FC, as they're now known, who have an active social media presence. They have a new website, which does appear to be a mirror image of a Ukrainian website. But I had a bit of a discussions this week with people who seem to be quite sympathetic towards the project, who say that this is going to be something good for the Dublin County region. So we have to see if that proves to be the case, or is it a case that Irish CFC are just empty vessels? That is what we have to figure out.
I see what you did there.
That should be their nickname. Look, if they want to really adapt to the league, it should be the empty vessels. That should be the club nickname, you know, not making the most noise, although a couple of people are making a lot of noise. They're trying to deal with the intricacies of the licensing process. And if that involved putting up, a sort of a website with a Ukrainian website copy, well, so be it. I mean, listen, the league as it is in no position probably to turn people away. But I suppose our scepticism comes from the experience of trying to plant a new club in the Dublin before. But we have to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. So we'll see. But the point is that like there's a lot to trash out in a very short space of time. I mean, like Christmas is on everyone's minds at the moment, and you know, because it's so close. And like, once Christmas, the festive period is out of the way, we're meant to be in pre-season, and we still don't know what clubs are supposed competing in the league. But I still think there's some suggestions the Cabinteely are still sore and fighting away over how the First Division was resolved. So again, like, you know, our infighting doesn't help us in the off-season. It happens for good reasons, because clubs will feel they have valid claims over this or that, and how the league is governed and managed could certainly be better. But, you know, we're always constantly striving for unity. So let's hope that we find it, you know. Let's hope we all find sort of a contentment in our lives in the next couple of weeks, you know. And 2021 is a is a better year for everyone in terms of you know, the footballing climate, because like we still should be grateful that we had football in the end of 2020.
Yeah, I think as you were saying though, on the like, and you made the point in the tweet, like, grand, we were kind of privileged as journalists to be able to go, but honestly, as a fan, you would almost certainly get fairly bored of this quite quickly, or at least I didn't go to the cup final, it didn't bother me at all to watch it on TV. It just got to that level where it's like if if James Connolly said Ireland without the Irish means nothing to me, like football without fans is something like that. And that's one thing I think next season, because there will be crowds back. I'm certain of that at some point or other anyway.
To some degree, yeah.
So it's when and whatever degree. But I think there's a massive potential there, because fans will be so happy to be back at games. And the league, the quality in the league still is, like when you think of that Rovers-Dundalk game, that's when it all kind of ground to a halt. The league is in a very good place in many ways. And I think...
In many ways, but not in all ways.
But the fact is that, like, crowds back next season with the quality of the teams in the division, with some of the players we have in the league, and I think I'm very excited for it. It does kind of feel like we're on the edge of something special, and it will take time, but I still think
the quality needs to be better, to be honest. I think that we have some good games and good moments, but like, for example, and listen, we have a bit of back and forth, that is a really talented Rovers side, but they actually haven't been pushed enough. And as we see, then, and I do agree with the point, the high intensity test that Dundalk got brought them on to the point where they were sharper at key points of the cup final. Yet Rovers like have been the better side across the year. So like that's the point, like that you need to expose our better teams to better games more often, and they don't get them enough. And like this is the problem. You know, even in a curtailed season, a lot of seasons finished in a lot of teams finished in a rump, you know, like, and that doesn't always dictate quality. So we would have slightly different views, you know, and I know we joke about it, but we sort of, you know, talk about all the League of Ireland teams that would have done better in Europe when there's no real evidence to back it up, unfortunately, on the basis of what they're doing domestically. Like they can't, some of them can't score at home. So not necessarily going to score against Rapid Vienna. But listen, let's not go over old ground. I mean, we've done 30 shows this year. We started off in a TV studio staring longingly into the camera like a particularly exaggerated Butch Harmon sign-off during a golf coverage. And we've ended up
that
in...
That honestly seems about 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 11 months ago or 10 months ago now. We've had... lockdown, we've had the top 50 lists and discussions around that. We've had Niall Quinn on in that sort of impasse that went on for 10 to 12 weeks about where the game
was
going.
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah, we've had all sorts of things happening in our lives in that period of time, you know. So it's
to say your handling of Mia there yesterday was a sight to behold.
You did visit yesterday.
Bringing her along to League of Ireland games. When Mia is old enough to go to League of Ireland games and all that, I wonder where we'll be at. Will we be just discussing the same old problems?
So some would say that this podcast has given me experience of managing. Volatile, you know, changeable moods, temperatures.
Yeah, maybe it's Stockholm syndrome for me.
I don't know what it is. You know, it could be something like that. But
on that note, we probably.
But it's been good. I want to thank
everyone, obviously, for listening.
Yes,
there are a lot of podcasts out there, and we don't underestimate the fact that you know, the people have listened in for four seasons now, and particular thanks to Lottoland for like really, really important sponsorship this season. And you know, when this show obviously did become a podcast again, and I think we've probably had some drawn out podcasts, Dan. We've probably had an aspiration that they'd be shorter, but we've just been very happy to be able to talk with League of Ireland. Yeah, and
we've had some people point out that they're cleaning garages or doing whatever, and it's probably been a different type of year for people, probably less commuting. I think a lot of people listen to us when commuting or going to games. Like a big thing for us would be on a Friday doing a shout out and getting people to, you know, download the pod and listen on the way to the match. And of course, we haven't had that because fans have just been, you know, sat at home sort of for long periods of time. So, and we do really appreciate all the support and messages. I think that we got through the entire season without even doing a rate and review shout, but we probably should say that we do appreciate any feedback, what we can do better, any reviews, anything like that. We do welcome it, because ultimately it is still, it's a show for the listeners.
Yeah.
And occasionally it's like you off, I suppose, as well. But listen, you know, I love you really.
Nice touch from Higgs to mention the two Hughes that had the two Derry fans that had passed away. And you think of obviously Big Deck, you think of Harry in particular, who
John Kennedy in Cork as well. You know, yeah, there's a lot
across the league. Maybe it was felt Harry's a bit more this year, but you do feel that, you know, I think going back next season as a supporter, you'll have found a newfound appreciation for just going, being alive and being able to go to watch your football team play, because this season, you know, it's funny, Dan, I was like saying 18 games is a joke. It's nowhere near enough. But to be honest, by the end, I wasn't that unhappy that it was over. It's just like, let's get into 2021 and start afresh.
Yeah, no, I sort of get your point. But I mean, it was still very congested and when the football did come back, and it did get to the stage. It's like the football without fans thing, as I said. It was a great novelty at first, but it did get to the stage towards the end where it was like, listen, these games are, like, this is playing to give people work and to keep them employed, yeah, and so on. But it was, there's a degree of soullessness about it. I think even I've spoken to players who won silverware who admitted that it still didn't feel the way it should have. Like, even, you know, there should have been, and I'm sure there was for people who watched it, but, like, you know, for example, Rovers winning the league after sort of 9 years should have been an event. And I mean, it was an event in people's lives, but it wasn't the event that it should have been.
It was,
you know?
You're thinking of Rovers, Milan, and, like, you know, those Dundalk games. As much as maybe in an alternative world with two-legged games, maybe these ties wouldn't have happened or whatever. But God Almighty, what a!
Yeah,
I mean, even if I think Dundalk with a crowd behind them might have done slightly better as well. I'm speculating, but the smaller teams with a vocal home crowd, it does give them a bit of an edge in those games. And even the game last night would have been an unbelievable occasion.
It was bizarre, and it's bizarre, you know, the surreal nature of the year, as in, like, and I mentioned this in my piece in the paper, like, that, you know, you had a Premier League team in Dublin. If you said at the start of 2020, like, the Dock would be managed by Italians, playing Arsenal, scoring twice against them in an empty Aviva Stadium in December, like, you would have been sort of, people would have requested to see that. And, you know, I'd come home and I was watching some of the coverage back, you know, and Owen Hargreaves and Martin Keown debating the Dundalk contract situation and what it all means. 2020 is just like one big sort of, like the type of sort of festival weekend you might have gone on when you were younger. So did that really happen? Did that actually all happen? And there is that sort of surreal aspect to it. And
bring on
2021. Let's hope for a better one. Hopefully we're back and we will talk to you then.
Thanks to everyone in air, particularly Chris and the boy Owen, who's had to put together these podcasts via the Zoom, which I'd never heard of, I have to say, 12 months ago. He's been a trooper as well.
Amazing.
Thanks.
Great fella as well. Very, very, very active. If actually people want to improve themselves over the winter,
don't listen to this podcast,
but if you want to sweat off some of those Christmas pounds, just go to find Owen Byrne on Instagram, and what you will see at various times of the day, just doing various physical pursuits and endeavours, just to highlight that he's just become a sort of a supreme specimen compared to the rest of us. In fact, during the 4 years of this podcast, he has basically got fitter and we've probably got fatter, I would say, you know. So if you want to improve,
speak for yourself, actually.
Well, actually, I'm not even sure that I have. I think, to be honest, there's a lot to be said for stress as a weight loss aid. But
we're dragging the life out of this now, to be honest.
Yeah, we are. But listen, you know, if people have stuck with us this long, Johnny, they probably don't mind. Everyone else is tuned off now, but we're done. We'll be back, we hope.
Just to all those Dundalk fans out there, I still love the town. Thanks to you all. Chat to you hopefully in 2021.
But there are limits to your life.